My name's Mary Dickinson, and I work for the Stop Burning Trees Coalition, which is a grassroots coalition of groups across primarily Yorkshire, but also across the UK, campaigning for an end to the subsidies for drafts and for a just transition for workers and for reparations to communities that are being impacted by Drax's pollution abroad. So Drax, located in Yorkshire, just near where I live, is the UK's single biggest carbon emitter. It's burning trees imported from abroad, primarily North America, shipping them over here and then burning them and claiming that it's green energy, which is completely false. Burning wood in power stations for electricity emits just as much carbon as burning coal does, if not more. But despite this, the government counts it as zero carbon, making Drax eligible for green subsidies. And to date, Drax has been receiving about £2 million a day in green subsidies coming from our energy bills to subsidise this tree burning. These subsidies were due to run out in 2027. And just last week, the government made a decision to extend these subsidies to continue supporting Drax's tree burning at the expense of bill payers, forests, communities abroad, and of course, our planet. And there's a few different aspects to this new subsidy decision. They are subsidising about half the generation they have been previously. So from 2027 to 2031, they'll be subsidised for about 26% of their burning at Drax Power Station. However, whilst that seems on the face of it good, that there's less burning going on, they've set the strike price incredibly high. The subsidies that Drax will be getting are about costing the public about twice as much as wind subsidies do. So it's putting incredibly high costs on bill payers. The government has talked about improving sustainability standards, moving the target, the required rate of sustainable sourcing from 70% to 100%. However, this doesn't actually stop Drax from burning trees from primary forests just outside of subsidised generation. It also, the way that the sustainability standards are enforced, there's a few different ways, and one of them, Sustainable Biomass Programme, which is an industry-run programme that has members of the Drax executive sitting on it. It's designed by the industry to work by the industry, and Drax has been claiming for years that everything they're burning is sustainable, when reality what they're doing is sourcing from primary forests, old growth forests, highly biodiverse forests that are vital carbon sinks, and claiming that's sustainable. And so this is a decision to continue propping up what Drax is doing. And one of the things that's not mentioned at all in the subsidy decision is the impacts on communities abroad. And so the trees that are taken from abroad, they're cut down, turned into wood pellets, and the making of those wood pellets is incredibly polluting. And so these wood pellet production sites are mostly located in low-income black and brown communities that are suffering this incredibly harmful pollution, which is linked to things like cancer, asthma, respiratory illnesses, heart disease. And they're targeting these communities that have already been marginalised for hundreds of years and are still politically marginalised with this pollution in the name of so-called the UK's green energy. And the UK government...
How can just making wood pellets cause so much pollution? It sounds impossible.
So the dust from turning the trees into wood pellets emits all sorts of pollutants, from PM2.5, PM10, to volatile organic compounds, to the most hazardous air pollutants that exist or are classified under US law. And so it's the turning, the grinding them in and compressing and drying them into wood pellets.
Were you talking about primary forest? I mean, look, I think for most people, forest is just forest. Why does it matter?
So primary forests, like the ones I'm talking about in British Columbia, are forests that have been previously untouched. They haven't been felled before. These forests are not only vital carbon sinks. As trees get older, they absorb more carbon. They're also highly biodiverse. There's also the impact that felling these forests has on soil carbon and on vital protected species. And we're seeing that these forests are shrinking, and this is partly linked to the wood pellet industry. And so we're seeing forests that have never been touched before, never been felled, vital for addressing climate change and reducing emissions, being felled or being sourced from to be burnt here in the UK.
Well, I mean, we're used to the term ancient woodland here in Britain, which means something very similar, that it's been there for hundreds of years. I mean, how can this possibly be called ecological?
I mean, it makes no sense. And I think the vast majority of scientists would agree that it's not ecological. But because of the way that carbon accounting works in the UK and internationally, we don't count any of the emissions from burning those trees. And so because of how the sustainability programs work, because of how carbon accounting works, they're basically able to fudge the numbers and say on our spreadsheet, this is ecological and it's fine.
Well, look, we've got Ed Miliband, our energy secretary. Has he had anything to say about this? Because he's supposed to be pro-ecology.
So he didn't make the announcement. Michael Shanks did, but it's his department that's decided to extend the subsidies for DRACs. And they have made acknowledgement of a lot of the issues with DRACs, but they also still decided to continue those subsidies. So they acknowledge the impact on forests. They said they're going to tighten those sustainability standards, which, whilst it sounds good, if it's all being verified by a company or industry that's designed by the industry, it doesn't really have that much of an impact. And I think the government is clearly starting to recognise the issues with DRACs. However, there is still a lot of work to be done and a lot of action that needs to be taken to put an end to these subsidies once and for all.
Well, you talk about the subsidies through bills. I think most people think of a subsidy as coming directly from government. But so how does that work? If people are paying a bit on their bills for subsidy, these are subsidies that are actually coming from these privatised utility companies that are supplying us with electricity, are they? How does it all work?
Yeah, so people pay a green levy on their energy bills, which is meant to support genuine renewable energy. Obviously, actual renewables are getting cheaper and cheaper, but the woody biomass industry is just as expensive as it ever was. So there's a part of our bills that goes directly to this green energy levy, and that's what's used to pay for what's called contract for differences, which is the type of subsidy, one of the types of subsidies Jack currently gets and will be the type of subsidy that they're going to get in the future, where the government effectively guarantees them a price for selling their energy that's usually very high above market price, and the subsidies taken from people's bills make up the difference of what the energy is being sold for on the energy market to the price that the government has set. And so it's taken from people's actual energy bills.
Oh, it doesn't sound to me like this is it sounds almost like this is something that's kind of been arranged and administered by the industry itself.
And I think that's the thing. There's been a huge amount of lobbying from the industry, and we're seeing that time and time again. We've seen that with all the different polluting industries, how intensive their lobbying is, how much they push for it and are capable of designing things that work for them. And even when, for example, with the recent government decision, the government announced stricter standards for their supply chain emissions. In 2018, there was a limit set to these subsidies, supply chain emissions. The standard the government has just set, despite saying it's much lower than it was previously, is four times that and above what Jackson's supply chain emissions currently are. So it looks good on paper, but really they're just giving them what the company actually wants. And we know there's been huge amounts of lobbying. We know Jack has been at all the different Labour Party conferences. They gave 12 grand to Labour. They also employ a huge amount of lobbyists to do that behind the scenes work. And I think we've seen this time and time again, and we're seeing it again here.
What about nuclear? What do you think about that? Because this is being held up over the last few weeks as the great solution with small modular reactors. We've got some big, down here in Bristol, we've got Hinkley C, which seems to be taking forever and doubling in price every 5 minutes. But isn't that going to help the situation?
I think I'm not campaigning on nuclear and I'm absolutely not an expert on it. My understanding is it's been extremely expensive, often fails, and there are a lot of risks that come with it, and quite close ties between continuing nuclear and continuing the nuclear weapons industry, but I'm not qualified, I think, to really comment on it beyond that.
Because the thing is that it does feature in the way that electricity prices are calculated, doesn't it? A lot of the, what is effectively quite cheap solar and wind powered electricity is the price of it to the consumers and to the networks is up to bring it up closer to what nuclear prices would be. I don't know how much you know about the way electricity prices are actually calculated, and some have suggested that this is why there's this really big expansion of solar farms in the countryside, is because the people that own them are getting paid way over the odds for the electricity they're producing.
I think what the statistics show, and also what the recent subsidies announcements show around wind and solar, is that wind and solar are far cheaper. They're far cheaper to run. The cost of running them has come down year on year, and they are our cheapest forms of electricity generation. And I think the way the electricity market works benefits polluters and isn't necessarily designed to actually really support and grow the scale of real renewables that we actually need. But there is work, and there are recent government decisions to grow those industries, and they're far cheaper than burning trees or fossil fuels.
Well, what I love about Stop Burning Trees, Reclaim the Power, Axe Drax, and groups like this, is that you put your money where your mouth is, and you actually go out on the ground in order to take non-violent direct action against these policies. So can you tell us what's been going on recently?
Yeah, so for Axe Drax, it's the direct action network. They have recently just launched a campaign targeting the lobbyists that Drax is employing. The day after the subsidy announcement was made, they occupied the offices of 5654 and Company, which is the lobbyists for both Drax and Heathrow. Obviously, we've just seen decisions that benefit both Drax and Heathrow. And what they're doing is taking power into their own hands, whether that's occupying the offices, bringing a light to the shadowy networks of lobbying that happen behind the scenes, or taking the fight directly to the politicians who are making these decisions, whether that's to disrupting Wes Streeting speeches or actions at Labour Party conference, or targeting the government departments that are making these decisions. I think for Axe Drax and for Reclaim the Power, part of the direct action is means people just using their own powers to disrupt and bring attention to what's happening, not waiting for the forces that be to decide to just listen, but to making that point and making sure it's heard, and using their power in whatever way that looks like to make that happen in a non-violent but disruptive way.
And I know last year there was an attempt to have a kind of education camp, a climate camp, near Drax to bring people from around the country to just sort of, you know, to get up to speed on some of these issues, which the, you know, the London media is really not educating the bill payers into what's going on behind the scenes. So how did that go?
So Reclaim the Power had planned a peaceful climate camp, the likes of which we've seen time and time again for decades here in this country. We have a long and proud history of having climate camps. And before the camp had actually started, the police reacted in the most obscene way, indiscriminately, preemptively arresting people that they thought had anything to do with the camp. And this was at the same time that there were race riots happening across the country. The police deployed hundreds of officers to Yorkshire to prevent people effectively from going camping. They seized things like wheelchair trackway, 500 rolls of toilet paper, cooking equipment, onions, all of that kind of thing for people that were planning a peaceful camp that was going to be educating people about Drax, educating people about the environmental racism that Drax is driving abroad, in particular with sessions linking up with those frontline community members to have people in the UK become more aware of what is being done with our money to these communities abroad. And rather than facilitating people protest, as is the legal right that we have in this country, the police and Drax as well, through an injunction that only covered Drax Power Station, was never going to be broken by anyone saying who looked at that, but served it via the media rather than actually to any groups, to create this thing of fear and force a huge amount of police crackdown on peaceful protests. And it was just another step in what we're already seeing in this country of police cracking down on legal and peaceful protests. And this was before anyone had even set up their tent or gone camping, but was nonetheless cracked down to do everything they could to stop that light being shone on what Jax is doing.
I wonder, was there any evidence that the industry were pushing government through the Home Office and the police to do that?
I have not seen anything that directly confirms that, but what we do know is that Jax was obviously working very closely with the police. They obviously were granted this injunction, which is something that we've seen polluters use time and time again to prevent any form of dissent, and then have it enforced extremely widely by the police. There have been questions raised in Parliament by different MPs, like concerned about what happened and outraged about what happened, but there's not been anything concrete that's come from that yet.
So I wonder were there actually any charges brought against protesters, and has equipment been returned? Are the police having to pay compensation or anything like that?
So the equipment, as far as I know, was returned a couple of months ago in absolute disrepair. Police have left tents outside just getting soggy and ruined. They somehow, for some reason, kept all the food to the point where it became a biohazard for people. They've left thousands or hundreds of onions just to go mouldy for months on end, and ruined all of this equipment that has been used by so many different groups across this country, and left it out in the rain just to decay. I think there are legal cases ongoing. Some charges have been dropped for people that just were indiscriminately arrested, but that is ongoing, and I think there'll be news coming out from Reclaim the Power as those things go on.
Well, for people who are bill payers, is there anything they can do?
I think the biggest thing we can do at the moment, because this charge is put on our energy bills whether we like it or not, and realistically this charge, the green levy, does actually support a lot of good things that are making our energy greener, safer, cheaper, more in line with energy security in this country. But it's our government that is making this decision to extend these subsidies. They are the ones with the power to stop this. And whilst this decision has been made, it is far from the end of the fight. So putting pressure on Parliament or getting involved with groups that are taking action to stop this, for the Stop Burning Trees Coalition I work for, we're a grassroots network. We work on just transition, grassroots political pressure, and challenging Jax's greenwashing. But Jax getting involved and taking direct action, forcing this to become even more of a media issue, forcing politicians to take a stand against this and challenge it in Parliament, is the most effective thing we can do, because that decision lies with our government.
Yeah, but what about those that might be thinking, all right, sounds good to be able to take direct action, but I don't want to end up in jail?
I think that is something that is often quite misrepresented about direct action. I think most groups who do direct action don't want to end up in jail. There are many forms of direct action. It's not just the classic ones that you hear of, or you see people getting arrested. There's actually so many different ways of taking direct action in your community, in targeting and disrupting events, or whatever that looks like. There are so many different ways to get involved, and Jax is very welcoming to that and very much does not seek arrest as part of its action, nor does Reclaim the Power.
Can you just tell us a bit about these different groups? What they are? I mean, is this all part of a sort of umbrella Extinction Rebellion thing? How are they all connected?
No, so Reclaim the Power is a direct action network that's existed for many years. They did a lot of work during the fracking campaign, supporting the grassroots front, and what they do is they throw their skills and resources and knowledge and energy behind different campaigns to support those grassroots efforts through direct action or other ways that they can support. And last year they decided to focus on Jax. Jax is a direct action network, as I've said, that takes direct action of disruptive forms, shining that light wherever it can, bringing that media attention, disrupting where it can. And Jax and Reclaim the Power were partnering on that campaign going forward. The coalition I work for is a grassroots coalition. Our members range from trade union councils to health groups to local climate campaigners. Extract is one of those member groups. We do the more grassroots legitimate side of activism, whether that's engaging with our politicians productively, holding demonstrations, or working on bringing about a just transition, campaigning for the green jobs that we actually need here in Yorkshire and not the ones that are sold to us by polluters. And so whilst we're all friends and it's part of a broader campaign ecology, each group is doing vital work in its own channel to sort of put that pressure on the government and on Drax in all the different forms that's needed.
Don't you think, Mary, that maybe all this campaigning against Drax as a coal power station has kind of backfired in the ecological movement?
No, I don't. I don't think that's a fair representation. I think the campaigning against coal was incredible. I think that was a brilliant win for the climate movement and for humanity and for our planet. We needed to move away from coal. I think what we've seen with Drax and the sort of growth of the woody biomass industry is this taking the easy way out that's being pushed by polluters. It's refusing to look at the things that we actually need to do to decarbonize rather than just fudging the numbers on a spreadsheet. And so I think the anti-coal movement has done an incredible job, and now we need to continue pushing that fight against polluters, whatever they look like, whether that's coal, whether that's burning trees, whether that's other fossil fuels, because it's all part of a broader fight to continue that going forward.
I mean, it's all pointless if the Chinese are building coal-fired power stations still.
I don't think any form of climate action is pointless. I think the fact of the matter is Drax is the UK's single largest carbon emitter. It emits more carbon than 29 different countries. There is a huge point to doing it. And I think also the UK has to look at its role in historical carbon emissions and how we've got to this point of climate crisis. The UK has been polluting for many years. It has been pushing forward fossil fuels. It has been profiting off pollution, and we have a role to decarbonise and do what we can, just as other countries do as well, and within the UK to support those decarbonisation efforts and also to support the communities that are being harmed through the UK energy policy. And I think wherever we are, everyone has a responsibility to be doing what they can. And that also includes looking at our historical responsibility, our current responsibility. And in the UK, it is obscene that we are subsidising Drax, the UK's single largest carbon emitter. It's obscene that we're subsidising the felling of forests abroad, the pelletisation of these trees, the pollution of these communities. It cannot go on. There are communities that are being poisoned by what Drax is doing. And we have a role here in the UK to put a stop to that, because it's fundamentally our money from our energy bills that are being used to fund that.
Yeah, but the Chinese are saying, well, quietly, not maybe on the international scene, what they're saying is, you're just using this as an excuse to stop our industrialization because you're jealous, because we're beating you. We're doing far better than you.
Regardless of what is being said on various international political stages, all countries need to decarbonise. The science is very clear. And whether we're here in the UK, we have much more power over our own energy policy, over our own government, and what governments are doing abroad. And I think we can't start attacking other countries until we get our own house in order. And that means coming off fossil fuels. It means stopping the subsidies for burning trees in power stations in Yorkshire.
So if people are interested in joining or following or finding Stop Burning Trees, what's the best way to find you?
Yeah, so going to our website, stopburningtrees.org, is the best way to get involved with the coalition, whether that's joining as a member group or just joining as an individual and getting involved with the work coalition. As I said, we do a huge wide range of work, from grassroots political campaigning to challenging greenwashing that Drax is doing everywhere in the UK, but particularly in Yorkshire, and also this fight for a just transition for both the workers at Drax and across Yorkshire and the UK. And then for Axe Drax, if people want to get involved with that, again, I think the best way is to go to their website, which is axedrax.uk, or find Axe Drax on social media, @axe_Drax, or for the coalition, find us on social media as well, which is SBT Coalition across all channels.
Now, as you're just talking about social media, people don't tend to watch TV much nowadays. I wonder, online, are there any good documentaries, sort of more long form, you know, bigger picture films that look into this topic that you'd like to recommend?
Yeah, there's a couple. BBC Panorama did a really good investigation of Drax sourcing from primary forests in British Columbia a couple of years ago, and they've done a few shorter videos since then showing that that's continuing. The Canadian broadcasting company Fifth Estate also did an investigation into Drax sourcing in Canada from their side, which you can find on YouTube. If you search the Fifth Estate Drax, something like that, it will come up. And there's a few other ones like Burned, A Tree's the New Coal, which you can find online, which is a couple of years old now, but has a very good overview of the issues. There's also, if you're interested in hearing more about the community impact, there's a few different videos that Greenpeace put out after an investigation, and also that Channel 4 put out looking into those community impacts. And you can search environmental racism, Drax, and they'll generally come up on YouTube or Google.
Okay, Mary Dickinson from Stop Burning Trees, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me.